Welcome to this week's special edition of Dugout Dish Podcast. I'm here with my co-host Keith Glasser. Keith, how we doing?
Great. How are you?
Good, man. We got two interesting topics, kind of hot off the presses, if you will, at least as of last week. But today we are going to cover the new contact rule that has been implemented by the NCAA with regards to recruiting. We'll talk about what that means, how it might impact things, how players and families can adjust their recruiting plans accordingly, and just kind of talk about some of the downstream impacts there. And then before we close out this special episode, we will touch on the roster expansion and the increase in the number of counters that will go into effect this fall. And once again, talk about some of the trickle-down effects with that change and how it may affect the college baseball landscape. So let's kick it off with the new rule change, Coach. So we got fundamentally what the NCAA did is they plugged the backdoor loophole, which allowed third parties to connect players with coaches, set up phone calls so that they could have those phone calls outside of the direct contact period. So essentially what the rule was before is that coaches weren't allowed to call or directly reach out to a player, but the loophole was a travel coach, someone like myself and Keith, would be able to communicate with that coach. They would be able to tell us, hey, can you have so-and-so call me at 7 p.m.? And as long as the player called the coach, you were able to have those phone calls. They have completely plugged that loophole, and now, as it reads, there is to be no contact and no offers extended prior to August 1st following the player's junior year. So if you are a 2025, as of April 26th, you can have no phone contact or any untraditional contact with a college coach until August 1st. When August 1st rolls around, we'll talk about this. It could turn into quite the cluster for some of the higher level players in terms of the contacts that are going to happen. For 26s, for a little bit of context, you will not be able to communicate with coaches in the traditional manner of a phone call until next August 1st, which would be August 1st of 2024. Did I miss anything there, Keith?
No, I think you nailed it. It's certainly a big change from the baseball landscape. You know, I think for years, a lot of people have been talking about, you know, why are we committing all these kids at certain ages, and you know, it's too early, it's this, they're not signing NLIs. And then I think the bigger thing that is, you know, obviously come about with the committing is that you know, you have a lot of guys that end up getting dumped as they get closer to NLI day at a bunch of programs. You know, there's not one specific. I think it's been a pretty big thing for a lot of these kids where they eventually, you know, whether it's scholarship money, you know, guys don't, you know, we've talked about it before with the draft being shortened, you know, where they used to think guys were going to get drafted and then sign, and now they're not. So they're showing up on campus, and you might have been that guy that was going to be the plug for that guy getting popped, and he didn't get popped. So now, like, they have to figure out what to do with the roster limits and the scholarship money. And, you know, unfortunately, in some regards, those guys were getting dumped, and, you know, you're kind of left out in the dark, you know, late into your junior year for nowadays, or senior year, really, trying to figure out a place to play. And I think in some regards, like, it's worked out for some people, but it's not a good place to be in, and it's not a good look, you know, from a college standpoint of being able to, you know, really get a lot of good players into a bunch of programs so that they can be successful. You know, we're really leaving these kids out in the dark, and, you know, they end up at some different schools that might not necessarily be a good fit, and it puts them on a different track. And, you know, if we could mitigate that stuff on the front end, I think this is a rule that can, you know, in the short term, you know, and there's probably going to be some refining to it, I think, over the years, but in the short term, it's going to kind of curb a lot of that early committing stuff, so that guys can, you know, really figure out where you fit during the years in which you're going to be committing.
Yeah, I agree. I think in theory, it should completely stop all the early commitments, right? Like we saw a flurry of them go out on April 25th. You know, you got coaches calling saying, hey, like, is this kid going to commit? Like, here's an offer. You know, so, that deadline, kind of organically created some panic or some decisions to be made, I should say, is probably a better way to put it. But it should curb that, which I think is a good thing for the long run. Like what we've seen in the last, 5-8 years is that these timelines keep speeding up. And I get it. Like I get it from a coach's perspective. If you're at the top level of college baseball, if you're in the SEC or the ACC or the Big 12, you know, those kind of conferences or schools who can compete at that level, right? I understand you're trying to get ahead of the Joneses, right? Go ahead and commit that kid who's really good as a freshman. I mean, shoot, right before the deadline, I saw a 28 commit, which that's a seventh grader, which is crazy. And I have my thoughts on that, which I'll keep to myself. But this is going to stop that, or at least it should stop it on the surface. Is there going to be some funny business goes on behind the scenes? Yeah, I don't know if the NCAA can completely prevent it. And our coach is going to be reaching out to travel guys and talking, to different people they know in the world to get a beat on kids or maybe pass a message along. Like, I don't know how they can possibly monitor that, but, fundamentally, they're not going to be able to make that commitment until their junior year. And to your point, Keith, I think some of those commitments that schools were throwing out to kids who were freshmen in high school and in some cases eighth graders, it's such a long-term play, and there's no way you can balance your books from a scholarship perspective that far out, right? You just don't know what your roster is going to look like. So oftentimes those commitments come with a lot of ambiguity around what that scholarship number might look like. And the other thing that goes unsaid, and hopefully this is going to curb this, is that those 26s, they need to continue to develop in order to be a committable guy. Because if you get to your junior summer and everybody else is caught up to you and now you're just another guy in that class, that's when guys were getting dumped, or you run into the roster situation that you alluded to. So on the surface, it should curb it. I think it will. I hope it does. I think that, at least from the guys that we've talked to, no coaches that we've talked to are against this. Like, I think that it's going to allow them to evaluate players better. You're not going to have to rush to a decision because so-and-so is going to hop in and make a kid an offer. I think it's going to allow younger kids to catch up to the top level at their age group, right? Like, we all know that, those 14-year-olds, it can take you time to get really good. So I think it's going to level the playing field a little bit. It's going to give guys a chance to develop. But I do think it's going to create some chaos come August 1st for a lot of guys. And I know me and you have talked about that.
Yeah. I mean, I think once we get into August 1st, like it's going to be pure chaos. But I also think to your point, it levels the playing field from, in baseball is a super unique sport, in my opinion, where you develop at such different rates in this sport. So you can actually be a little bit behind where, most people are probably but some people are going to be who are committing to some of the bigger schools early. And then by the time you hit 16, and you're recruitable, you are where those other guys are. Like, you've made up the difference. And so for some people, it happens like that. For other people, it happens when you're a freshman or sophomore in college at maybe a Division II or Division III, which, we've talked about. That's why it has become super competitive in college baseball. So I think it's going to level the playing field a little bit there, which I think is great, because you're not going to get people overcommitting and then being like, oh, we missed on, this guy all of a sudden is a lot better than this guy we committed, so let's commit him too. And it almost feels like, and I think a lot of people have kind of said this, but it almost feels like it's an arms race from just trying to get as many good players as you can so other people can't get those kids. And I think it's going to kind of level that out. Like, do I think that a lot of these coaches are still going to lean on, you know, people like us and summer coaches and people they have relationships with to at least have an idea of what kids are like and their makeup and things like that to kind of be able to make a little bit of a quicker decision. Yeah, I do, you know, but you're not really going to be able to get these kids on campus and talk to them nearly as much as you used to, where you used to really be able to get a feel really early on of like, okay, this is a kid that I think is going to fit into our program, into our culture, into what it is that we're trying to build here, until they really get older. Cause you know, realistically, it's only going to be on campus camps. You know, and you and I've talked about, it's like, how many times can a kid legitimately afford to go to some of these camps? You know, let's say you're a New York kid and you might be an ACC kid, you know, how many times can you legitimately afford to go to an ACC camp, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 times? You know, you might have to get on a flight that many times and, you know, get there. Like, that's not a realistic ask for a lot of families. So it's really going to kind of even the playing field from that standpoint, which I think is great, because I think it's going to give some kids a more opportunity to be able to be recruitable as they get older and really take that pressure off of, you know, seeing everyone else commit and wondering why and things like that. But I also think it's, you know, on the flip side, going to make it more competitive for baseball, because now you're going to have a bunch of programs that are going to be going after a lot of the same kids, you know, and I think that's why, you know, and I've kind of always thought about this from a regional standpoint. Like, so I've always kind of thought, like, the MAC where we played, like, you're recruiting the same kid more or less. Like, you're recruiting the same kid, like, in the Northeast, in the Mid-Atlantic, to go to one of those schools. You know, we did in the Liberty League, like us and some of the other schools, like, you're recruiting the same kid. Like, that's going to kind of start happening, I think, across a lot of levels, like, because you're going to have a lot more data and actually being able to see these kids play without talking to them, to see where they fit athletically for you. And then we're going to get into the character piece, like we've talked about, like, do these kids fit what it is that we stand for and what we want in our program? You know, so that's where I think the pure chaos part is going to come in. Like, it's going to be a quick, like, we're going to have to find out in the first week or two of August of, like, where these kids fit. And you're going to see a flurry of people really trying to make decisions. So I think it's going to create a little bit more back end work with, you know, what people who are around these kids a lot more think, and then really trying to make decisions, you know, on camp or at camp when you see them, and then also when you get them to campus, you know, because I think that that's a real big thing for kids when you decide to commit. Like, you want to get to campus and see if that's going to be a feel for you. Like, yeah, this is the place I feel like I should be. So it's going to be, it'll be fun, but it's going to be certainly chaotic on that end.
Yeah, I think camps are going to become really important, right? And if you're a parent or a player, listen to this. I mean, a dozen different coaches that we've talked to probably recently, every single one of them to a man has said, we're adding camp dates to our summer. Because they want to get those kids to camp, because it now becomes the only mechanism that they get face-to-face time with anybody that they might be recruiting, right? So that's important for the character evaluation. I think the interesting thing about this rule change is that prior to the rule change, you might not see a kid a ton, but you could talk to them a lot. Now, I think what we're going to find is that the talent evaluation is going to be a lot more complete, because the way things were running before is that if you're a 25 or a 26 and you're a really good player and you're in at a school that's going to recruit that early, you might have to, in order to get in the mix, you might have to make a decision off of one outing or 8 at bats, right? And you're going off of pure athleticism. You're going off of maybe a recommendation that somebody's seen, you know, seen the kid perform at a high level for an extended period of time. I think that coaches are going to be able to sit on kids, and you're really going to be able to dive into the talent evaluation. But the character evaluation piece is going to be the tougher part, you know, because you may only have one camp interaction. You may only have the context. So, like, you're really going to need, as a coach, you're really going to need to lean on people that you trust. I'm really curious to see how it's going to play out August 1st, because I think the highest level kids, right? The ACC and the SEC kids. Those guys might be operating almost off of a draft board. Like, here are our top 10 arms in the 25 class that we like. We're going to offer this guy. He's going to get 48 hours to determine. And then we're going to offer this guy. And then we're, and they're just going to move down their list until they fill out the class. Is that how it's going to happen? I don't know. But I think that might be a decent representation of what we could see. And you're going to see all those top kids fall off the board really, really quick, which is great for those kids, right? And those kids were going to get committed early anyways. What the interesting thing that I think is going to play out is that those mid to bottom level Division I schools, I don't think it changes what they do, right? I just don't. I don't think that those guys are really going to be spending a ton of time trying to commit 25s anyways. So I think that in a way it benefits them, because immediately what happens is all the top 25s that they weren't going to get anyways, they're gone. So now you can focus in on the kids that you may have like a legitimate chance at, right? And if you're a mid-major school and you're listening to this and you take offense to that, like, don't. It's the truth. Like, the top level kids are going to go play at the top level schools. And now you get to pick from the next best kids and do what you do best, which is develop. But I don't think it changes it for maybe not the mid, because the timelines have sped up there, but like that bottom 35% of Division I schools, those are the schools that I just don't think it affects their timeline at all.
No, I don't think much of it does, because I think a lot of them were waiting anyways to see how a lot of things shake out. And I'd also be interested to see, and this is just because this is also new, like how many of those top programs now go a little bit more JUCO heavy or transfer heavy than they've done in the past. Because I don't think it changes much of the rules from the transfer standpoint, and especially from a JUCO, because if you've graduated, you have, you know, free reign to go wherever you want with your associate's degree. So, you know, I wonder if in some regards, some of the top programs really start to kind of shore up maybe some needs that they have with the transfers from a JUCO and the portal standpoint, you know, which could potentially make this even more competitive, where, you know, some of those guys that might have gone somewhere, you know, to a top program, like maybe they're, you know, I think they're still going to go, but, you know, you might have some of the higher end mid majors that become a lot more in play, because it's like, well, you guys, I'm a shortstop. I just saw you committed five, you know, two JUCO senior shortstops, you know, this high end mid major is recruiting me to be, you know, battle for starting time as a freshman. Like, that could be a lot more appealable as well to some kids. So I think that could be a little bit more interesting. And like I said, like, this is so new. This is just me thinking about this from a coaching standpoint of what that could be. Like, I think there's going to be some creative ways to try to plug some holes that they've obviously done in the past, but maybe they might, you know, maybe do a little bit more, because you can get a little bit more character deep on some of that stuff. You know, so maybe that ends up opening up like more people deciding they want to go JUCO. And go that route, because it might be a little bit more accessible for you in 2 years than what it is now. You know, so it's, I think there's a lot of layers to this onion. And obviously only time will tell with how it goes, but I agree. Like, from a high school standpoint, I think the on-campus camps are going to become a very critical part of the recruiting process, of kind of narrowing in on what schools it is that you are interested in, if you're, you know, interested in Division I and you're a Division I guy, and kind of targeting the schools it is that you're interested in, and then attending those camps and figuring out, like, is this the place you want to go to? You know, we've talked about it, like, we are pro on-campus camp here at EMD. You know, we think that it's a great opportunity for you to actually get in front of coaching staffs, see what they have to offer, what the school has to offer. Do you fit with them? Do you fit with the players? Things like that. Like, it is a really good opportunity for you to do and figure out where you are in the process for yourself and where you fit with that particular school, you know, because you're going to get the kind of the feedback you know, almost instantly of like, yeah, they like me, or, you know, I'm on the wait list, or, you know, they don't think I'm a fit. And then that's fine. It's just more information you have to figure out where you want to go from there. You know, so I think it, you know, in some regards, it might even clean up, you know, that aspect of the murkiness of where you stand with some people, because I don't think schools are going to have the time to really kind of drag their feet on some of this stuff. Like, they're going to narrow in on guys that are interested in them and coming to camps that they get to know that they want to bring in to their programs. You know, I don't think it's, you know, it's not going to be the kind of wait and see. It's going to be like, hey, this guy's here. He's interested in us. We like him. He's good. We think he fits. We're going to move on him pretty soon, you know, pretty quickly come August 1. Whereas in the past, I think it was kind of, you know, in some regards, it would be like, hey, you know, maybe we have some other guys on the hook. He's like the seventh guy on our board. Like, now it's going to be like, hey, man, like, he's seventh on our board, and we've already met with five kids on campus that, you know, on our camps that we really like ahead of him. So, you know, we're going to go in a different direction. You know, so I think it might even clean it up from that standpoint of, you know, having the information that you need in order to make the best decision for yourself.
Yeah, I think the fundamentals of identifying camps and stuff doesn't change, right? And I think it actually might become increasingly important that you have some guidance as to where to spend your time and your money, right? Like, if you're 25 right now and you are one of those dudes who's trending towards being a guy who may get a bunch of attention come August 1st, whether at any level of Division I baseball, if you're one of those guys, you need to know where you fit in the Division I landscape, right? Because make no mistake, some of the lower mid-level Division I schools, they are going to try to make a push to go get a 25 early, right? Maybe you try to, you know, throw a big offer out at a kid that you really, really like, and like, maybe he ends up coming to you for various different reasons. So I do think you'll see some of that. But if you're that high school kid who's in that category, right, you need to understand the landscape well enough to know, I'm not, me going to said ACC school camp, or me going to UConn, or me going to, you know, name what other really good mid-major school, is a waste of time, because I'm not really at that level. But maybe a school that's just below that tier is where I should really be spending my time. You know, maybe I should go to a school that, you know, isn't a top 25 program, but is a really great place to play college baseball, because, and we've talked about this, it is not all equal. There are tiers within Division I baseball. They're very well defined for the most part, and you need to understand where you fit from a physicality perspective, from a metrics perspective. Those things factor in, and the gameplay, like, you need to have a track record of success regardless of the level. You know, you need to be able to compete at the level that you're at in order to get recruited there. So I think you need to be prepared. And then even for those really high end kids, right? If you're one of those bros and you're going to get called by every SEC school or every ACC school on August 1st, you need to be informed. Because those guys aren't going to, they're not going to dick around. You're not getting a month to decide on an offer from one of those ACC schools there, because they are skimming through a list of the elite players in the country. And you're going to need to be able to make an informed decision in what might be 48 hours. I could totally see a situation where some of these guys say, hey, man, you got to the end of the day. You want it or not? And do I agree with that? No, I hate it, but I also understand it, right? You know, you need to go get the players that you think are good enough. And when there's going to be a massive time crunch on those kids, you're probably going to have to put some pressure on guys. So if you are that guy, right, if you are one of the best players in the country, you need to do your research, right? You need to probably get to some of those campuses, whether it be through camp or just visiting. Right, these kids travel all over the country playing, a lot of them on the up and down the East Coast. Like, if you're one of those guys, right, and you'll know, go visit campuses, right? Do your research on coaches. Call some people. You might know somebody who plays in those programs. Like, hey, man, I think I got a legitimate chance to play at this school. Like, what do you think of the coaches? Like, what's your experience like been there? Most players will tell you the truth, and you need to have as much information as you can possibly have so that you can make a good decision. And if you don't, you're not putting yourself in an advantageous position is really what it comes down to.
Well, the big thing I think is the, you know, to piggyback on what you just said, I used to always tell kids when they would come to our camp at RPI, like, my players are here to work, like, ask them anything. They will be brutally honest with you with all the questions you have, whether it's about me, whether it's about the program, whether it's about the school, like, they will be honest. The other is every single school in the country offers admissions, info sessions, and tours. When I first started RPI, I worked in admissions for 7 years there before I became the head coach. Like, I was giving info sessions. Like, every school has info sessions. They have tours. They'll take you around campus. There's open houses. There's plenty of ways that you can actually go visit these campuses. That's not a, you know, unofficial visit from the NCAA standpoint, where you can actually go get a feel for that campus, the academics. Because at the end of the day, like, you're going to spend not only a lot of time from a baseball standpoint, but you're spending a lot of time in classrooms with other students. Like, you want to be at a place where it's going, like, you feel as though you're going to be able to succeed, not only athletically, but academically. And you'll figure out the athletic piece pretty quickly. You're like, you know, you'll have a pretty good idea of, like, okay, like, I think, like, I'm going to fit with this coaching staff. If you're going to camps and, like you said, you're talking to people that you probably know, like, you're going to have a pretty good feel on some of the conversations you'll have with them. Like, I think I'm going to fit with this program pretty well. But the big piece of it is figuring out, like, do I fit here personally? Do I fit here academically? You know, those things are just as important as the athletic side too. So being able to get out there and actually visit these places and get a feel. And sometimes it might not, like, you might not even have to visit, you know, a specific school, but getting out there and understanding, like, okay, what is a campus that has 20,000 people who attend that school look and feel like? What is a school that has 1,400 people look and feel like? Do I like it? Do I not like it? You know, there's a lot of things that go into that. Like, you might love the school, but there's only 2,000 people that go there, and it's, you know, you might feel like it's high school all over again. You might not like that. That might not be a good fit for you. You know, so you want to know that stuff just as much as you do the academic piece. And I agree with you, like, you need to get out and visit these schools to kind of see, like, if you are going to fit there outside of the academic, or excuse me, outside of the athletic piece too. You know, because they're going to limit the unofficial visits and official visits, but, you know, it's not precluding you from going on an admissions tour and figuring out, like, hey, I think that Wake Forest could be the place for me to go to.
No doubt about it. I mean,
I went to Penn State and there's 50,000. I don't know how many people go there, but it seems like a really big school. Like, there's 30,000 people that go there. Like, that doesn't seem like a good fit for me, you know, but figuring that piece out of it is just as important as, like, hey, you know, I got to fit here academic or athletically too.
Yeah. I mean, if you're a parent, right, you know, a lot of these programs, they go down to WWBA in Georgia, right? If you're a Northeast parent or you're a Mid-Atlantic parent, maybe think about driving down this year. If your kid's that good, like, if your kid's a legitimate Division I player, whether it be at the high mid-major, which I think they're going to still continue to move pretty quickly, like, I think August 1st is going to be a legitimate day there, or you're one of those guys who's really high level, just look at the map and start looking at schools. I mean, shoot, if you're driving down through Virginia and you're a really good player, like, maybe you swing by Maryland's campus, you know, maybe you go check out GW's field, you know, then you can hit up VCU and William and Mary and UVA on your way down. I mean, the cluster of schools in North Carolina, like, you could hit up five schools in a day if you wanted to. If you really wanted to do it, like, you got NC State, you got Duke and North Carolina down in the triad. You know, Elon's not far. You know, you got Davidson and Wofford. Like, you got all these awesome programs up and down the East Coast. Like, maybe instead of flying, you leave 2 days early and you dedicate yourself to going to see some of these campuses. If you can't go to the camps, find ways to go see these campuses. Even if it's not necessarily a school that may be a fit for you, you now have information. And information is power in this process, because it's going to allow you to make a good decision. So I think that that's what the really good, like kind of those higher end players who are going to end up getting a ton of attention in August 1st. I think it's important for the guys who don't. Rule number one, don't panic. You know, it's okay to not be an SEC or an ACC guy or one of those guys who's going to go off the board really early in the process. Just means you know, if you want to play at that level, you probably got to get a little bit better. Like those guys won't be done on August 1st. Like they're always looking for good players, but it also might open you up to an opportunity to play at some other really good places where you have a chance to go develop, go a chance to be a part of a winning program. You know, so that's one thing I worry about is kids getting like really discouraged because they don't get a bunch of phone calls on August 1st. And easier said than done, but like you shouldn't be, right? You still have a heck of a lot of time to continue to develop, and schools, not just at the Division I level, but to Division II and Division III level. I can promise you, if you're a 25 and you don't get a chance, you don't get a bunch of phone calls on August 1st, it's okay. There's going to be plenty of schools looking in the fall. There's going to be plenty of schools looking next spring and next summer that are looking for players who can make an impact in their program. And I think that's important for kids to understand and know that it's going to happen to the vast majority of high school kids. So you're not in this lone box of the kid who didn't get a phone call. Most kids are actually not going to get phone calls.
Well, you're 100% right. I mean, we're legitimately talking about the upper echelon of Division I baseball. We're not really, you know, obviously a lot of Division I schools are going to be making a ton of calls on August 1st. But the reality is, you know, based off the NCAA numbers, it's like 2.3 or 2.4, something like that. Like 2.4% of kids are going to play Division I baseball. You know, so that leaves the other 6% or whatever, you know, ish, we'll call it. I was a history major, not a math major. That are Division II and Division III. Like you're already going to kind of be being contacted by them. You know, so that doesn't necessarily preclude you from playing Division I baseball, but you know, the reality is like, you know, if you're going to be recruitable and have the luxury and the wherewithal to play in college, like you'll get recruited. It's just like this rule is really designed for, my personal opinion, the upper echelons of trying to get people to not overcommit guys so far out. You know, it's going to change things, but you know, there's no reason to get discouraged if you don't get phone calls. You know, I think we've talked about this before, like the two of us committed super late. You know, that could potentially become a little bit more normal for kids nowadays moving forward with this rule than what it's been the last couple of years, where, you know, I committed in September of my senior year. Like that could start being a little bit more of a reality for some of these, you know, mid-major-ish type schools where you kind of wait because you have to, and you find these guys that develop a little bit later and you keep some scholarship money and spots open on your roster because of it. And you kind of find these guys because they're out there. You know, I used to get them in Division III baseball where we'd get guys coming in and they were pretty good and pretty far along. But because of the way the landscape was, we got these guys that were missing something as juniors, and, you know, they developed them as seniors. You know, so it'll be interesting. I think it's great. I think it's a great rule. I think it's going to. It'll be interesting to see how everything plays out with how everybody is going to attack this rule. And I think like anything else, you know, try to do the most without breaking said rule, you know? So that's where I think it's going to be. It'll be interesting from that standpoint to kind of see how people go about doing it that way. But, you know, I certainly think it's going to curb a lot of the early commitments and the kind of over recruiting classes, you know, and kind of see where the chips fall there. You know, this is kind of this is as fluid as you're going to get, I think, from a recruiting and baseball standpoint, because this is going to change, right? Like what we think is going to happen this year is not going to be what's happening next year. and subsequent years after that. Like it's going to be a super fluid thing. And you're going to learn on the fly, you know, guys like us and coaches and kids, and, you know, it's just kind of figuring out like where it's going to go and how it's going to be and how everyone can kind of help each other.
Yeah. I'm actually, what kind of nefarious activity takes place is going to be interesting, because there's always going to be coaches and programs that are going to try to skirt the, you know, skirt the rules and regulations. Like it happens.
There's gray area. We know it happened. There's a lot of people who like to live in that gray area.
Yeah. And it seems to stay like fairly in-house within the college world. Cause like, I mean, I've heard of guys calling NCAA out for recruiting violations and stuff, but you know, there's a lot of stuff that goes on that everybody's like, yeah, that dude does that all the time. Like, you know, so it'll be interesting to hear some stories. I'm not sure if we'll ever be able to divulge any of those to the wider public. but I'm sure we'll have a good laugh about it, or you know, figure out what that looks like. But I think at the end of the day, like you said, Keith, and we'll move on to the next piece of it, but I think ultimately it's a good thing. It's going to stop all the crazy early commitments. It's going to allow these younger kids to just focus on playing, focus on getting better, focus on being a good teammate, learn how to play the game. Don't just try to be good at drills, right? Like, that's a big piece. If you're a player listening to this and you're a freshman in high school, like, don't get good at doing cone drills as an infielder. Get good at being an infielder. Play the game well. Be in the right spot. Like, watch a lot of baseball. Get coached. Make mistakes. Like, this should actually afford some freedoms for these kids. It should take some pressure off of them where they can go play. And they can focus on just competing and being a good teammate and winning. And, you know, the days that you aren't as good don't have that pressure anymore. Like, just – take the good with the bad, keep moving on, keep looking to develop. And hopefully that'll help some of these kids take the focus away from like, I want to get committed. No, like, how about let's just get better and the commitment will take care of itself. So I'm hoping that's going to be some of the downstream effect. But if you are one of those players who's lining up to be kind of an August 1st-ish type dude, like, you need to be prepared. Like, you need to start doing your homework. You need to go see campuses. You need to identify the correct camps. Not the places that you hope you can play, the places that are attainable, places that you could see yourself actually going to compete for a spot. Because the next thing we're going to talk about, I think this is throwing a bigger wrench in things than I think this is a more interesting rule change than the actual contact rule, which is the roster expansion. So starting this fall, Division I rosters will go from 35 to 40 in the number of counters. And when I say counters, it's the number of players on your roster that can have athletic scholarships, goes from 27 to 32. The interesting change within that, not just the pluses, not just the plus fives on both of those, but they're not changing the dollar amount. It's still 11.7 for a fully funded program. Now, we all know 11.7 is a fluid number for a lot of programs. Right. Funny money. There's all different types of things that different schools can do, whether it's stacking money or you can get in-state scholarship as a sophomore because you move off campus. Like, there's all different stuff that gets done to play with that 11.7. And then you have the NIL thing, which it's becoming a thing in baseball. And I think it's removing the significance of scholarships, because at the end of the day, if you're one of those schools in the SEC who's getting involved with this kind of stuff, what is a 30% or a 40% scholarship to somebody when you can give them $100,000 a year? Like, it doesn't mean anything. So, but for the smaller schools, you have to spread potentially 11.7 people who aren't getting in the NLI stuff, NIL stuff. You now have to spread 11.7 across five more people potentially, which doesn't make it any easier. But the back end of that roster is where it gets interesting, Keith, and I'll let you take it from there.
Well, before I get into that, I think the one thing to note too is that, you know, especially at some of the mid majors and below, like not everyone is fully funded at 11.7, you know, so that's going to complicate things a little even more. You know, if you have 8 scholarships and all of a sudden you can have 32 counters, like it's going to be hard to do. You know, but the interesting thing when you start talking about expanding the rosters out to 40 is, you know, what is going to make up the bottom end of, like, what makes up those extra 5 guys in your roster composition? You know, I think there's going to be a decent amount of, especially at the higher levels, you're going to see everyone try to get to 40 because you can, you know, same kind of thing. Like, it's almost like an arms race. Like, let's try to get as many good players as we can and kind of see where it shakes out and see what happens. You know, I almost wonder in some regards in the mid majors and below, like, do they even get to 40? You know, I think it's doable, honestly. You know, when I coached Division III, there was no roster limits, and I got up around 38, 39 one year during the COVID years, and like, it's a lot of guys. Like, it is a lot of people to manage and be around and coach. You know, and I think with the rule change, the other rule change in Division I, which you know, is a little bit more probably out there, the addition of the third paid assistant, you know, I think that might mitigate it a little bit more, where you have more people kind of on eyes and being able to work with these kids. But, you know, 40 kids in a baseball program is a lot. You know, and I, like I said, I think from the, you know, at the higher levels, with the amount of, you know, the baseball ops and the managers and the amount of people, the support staff that you have at some of these bigger schools, it's 100% going to be doable and manageable. You know, but you get into, you know, a school like, you know, and I'll say Marist, because we played there, like, I don't know if they're going to have the staff and the support staff to handle another 5, 6, 7 guys, depending on the year, you know, because not everyone always hits 35. Like, sometimes it's going to be 32, 33. You know, all of a sudden you add 7, 8 more guys in there. Like, you know, now you're talking not only support staff and coaching, like, now we're talking budget constraints too. Like, that's gear, that's bats, that's gloves, that's helmets, that's travel, that's meal money, that's rooms on the road. That's, you know, there's a lot of things that kind of go into that from a coaching standpoint, that you're really going to have to weigh when you're constructing your roster. You know, like, do we have the money to do this? You know, and I think that's an interesting thing that I think kind of gets lost a little bit in, like, yeah, it's awesome that we're expanding rosters and more people have, you know, kind of access to do it. But I don't know how many, you know, kind of mid-major schools are really going to be able to handle that from a coaching, from a staffing, from a budgetary standpoint. You know, so it is a big thing. From a rule change standpoint, but it'll really be interesting in my eyes from a coaching standpoint of where, like, how does that shake out for a lot of these programs? Like, are they going to be able to, you know, some of these programs aren't going to be able to fund a third paid assistant, you know, that is essentially going to stay as a volley or, you know, get, you know, a small stipend, whatever that is. So, like, you know, it doesn't mean that they do not support the sport or the program. They just don't have it from a money standpoint, you know? And I think that, like, that's where, to me, it's going to get super interesting and in how coaches decide program to program, how they're going to build their roster within that new rule.
Yeah. I mean, as a coach, like, you try to get as many good players on campus as you can. So I think you're right. Like, I think people are just kind of try to stack it up and they're going to look for free guys and they're going to find different ways to spread the money out, you know, whether it's stacking academic, financial aid, whatever it is. Maybe you go find a kid who can be a full pay guy that's got some ability that you might think you might be able to develop. Like, there's a lot of ways you can fill that, you know, those last 5. There's a lot of kids who are dying to play Division I baseball, regardless of what the opportunity looks like. The interesting thing for me is, right, I'm going to try to break this down from a roster standpoint. With 35 guys, right, here's the reality of most good programs, right, most programs in general. Like, you run out your 8 position player starters. Yep, right, your standard guys. Within those 8, you probably have at least two other kind of platoonish dudes who step in, maybe an outfielder who hits left-handed, who hits against righties, and, you know, a right-hander hits against lefties. Maybe the same thing in the infield, and you've kind of got that other hitter who's going to fill in that DH spot. You know, you might rotate based on defensive ability, you know, based on the guy who's throwing, and then you have your backup catcher. So you may have enough flexibility where you have like maybe 12 guys that you play routinely. You know, if you're deep and you've got some flexibility, maybe you got a kid who can really defend, who's going to play at the back end of games. Kid who's really good doing small ball stuff. Like, you might have that extra guy, but like, we'll call it 13. So you got 13 position players who are really going to play. If you're lucky, you've got three other guys on your bench that might be like true developmental guys. Like, they need a year to get stronger, right? They need to get a year just to get some at bats and learn how to be a college player. On the pitching side, you've got your 3 weekend guys and your midweek guy. If you're really good, you got like five bullpen dudes you want to go to. If you're at the highest level, you might get into like that 11th or 12th arm that you feel really good about. Anybody else after that is going to be a developmental dude. So if you take the best case scenario, you take the 12 arms, which we know is most coaches would beg for 12 guys that they want to throw. It's probably more like you got eight dudes that you really want to throw. And then you got a ninth and 10th guy that's like, yeah, we can work with him. So, but we'll call it 12, and you got 13 position players. So that's 25 guys who are going to play in any capacity. So even with a 30-man roster, there's 10 dudes who aren't playing, right? A few of those guys might just need a year, right? So let's be honest there. They need a year in the weight room, need to get some more at-bats. Maybe they need to go play summer ball to get those at-bats under their belt, and they can come back and they can be a dude. So call it seven dudes who probably are never going to play in that program, right? Sounds harsh. It's the truth. That's with a 35-man roster. When you get a 40-man roster, even if you're generous, there's 10 guys on every 40-man roster that will likely never be a major contributor in that program. I think, and this is a prediction, you can hold me to it, but I think you're looking at another 700 to 1,000 kids who are going to go into the portal every year, because they're going to look in the mirror and they're going to go, shit, I'm number 38. I'm not going to play here. I want to play. Playing time is important to me. I'm going to go somewhere else. And I think you're going to see a lot of it at the highest levels, because they're the ones who are going to have the flexibility to fund those extra five players. They're going to have the staff to support those extra five players. And I think kids at that level, they're going to be recruitable at all those mid-major and low-level Division I schools. Or they're going to go back and they're going to do the 4-2-4 thing, and they're going to go do a year at JUCO, go get a bunch of at-bats under the belt, you know, kind of go that route. So that's my prediction. I think what it's going to end up is, it sounds like an awesome opportunity for kids. I think a lot of kids are going to make a blinded decision and end up being – kids could make a blinded decision and end up as the 38th man on a roster, and they get there and go, holy crap, I'm never going to play. And then immediately go into the portal, which, so be it. It's fine. We've talked about the portal's not necessarily a bad thing by any stretch. It increases competition level, and sometimes it gives you an out so you can make an adjustment for a decision that may not have been the best fit for you for various reasons. But that's just my prediction. I think that's what the trickle down effect of this is going to be. And if you're a high school kid, it kind of all goes back to having information, being prepared, understanding where you fit, understanding what you are trying to get out of your process. If you're okay being the 38th guy because you get to wear a uniform from a school that everybody, you know, values from a baseball perspective, if you're cool with being that guy, great. But if you're not, take a look at some other schools, because you might end up having a great career at some awesome programs, depending on what you're really trying to get at.
I agree. You know, I think the other side to it too is there's, you know, we've had a bunch of coaches on, you know, and one of the biggest things that I think they've all talked about is like, they're looking for guys that have a super high compete factor to them. You know, and if you do have that super high compete factor, you know, I think this could go in your regard, like, or in your point, like one of two ways. Like, you might think you have a super high compete factor, and then you get there and you're like, I don't. And you might jump in the portal and go somewhere else. Or you do, and you stick it out and you compete your butt off to try to really win time over the course of the next 4 or 5 years. You know, but I agree. Like, I think it's going to add a lot more people into the transfer portal from some of those higher levels because they do have the resources to do it. You know, you're just going to want to have the most information in front of you before you make that decision of like, hey, where, you know, it takes nothing to be like, hey, where do you see me fitting in? You know, and if the answer is kind of, hey, like, you know, maybe by a junior you're playing, that might not be the best place for you to go right away if you're looking to play baseball and compete at the high, you know, compete in college baseball. You know, it's okay to go play at different levels. Like, we've talked about this before. College baseball is super competitive at all levels. You know, just because you're not playing at the highest doesn't necessarily mean that you're not competing, you know, for some against really, really good players and for some serious hardware. You know, there's divisions within divisions. Like, there's division two teams that will wax division one teams, and division three teams too. Like, you can roll out there and go compete nationally at division three level and play really high-end baseball, and really be able to compete at a super high level and get a lot out of your college experience versus just, you know, throwing a uniform on at home games and not really traveling to away games, which, you know, for me, that would not be something that I would want to do. I don't think you would either. You know, but
I even hated having to post that list.
What's that?
I hated having to even post that list when we travel. You know, you travel and you got to fly. Like, you can't take 35 guys. Mm-mm.
Like, well, and then I think the other thing too is like, you, like, they're, I, at least to my knowledge, like, they're not changing the rules on how many guys can go to the regional tournament if you make it, or regional tournaments usually pared down to 25. So yeah, most 25, most 20 somewhere in there. So like, you're losing 8 to 10 guys not going to a regional. Like, now you're losing 15 dudes not going to a regional.
Yeah. Most conferences you have to essentially submit an active roster for the weekend.
Right.
You know, so just because you're on the team, like, you may only really be on the team for home games.
Right. Like, you'll get a uniform, but you're literally not active.
Yeah.
You'll have some baseball pants and you'll take some BP, but you're not really you're not playing at all.
Yeah. And that's a tough thing.
But, you know, I think it's an important thing to note because I don't think a lot of people know that.
Yeah.
You know, hey, like, there's conference rosters and you get into it, like, your team gets into a regional, like, there's a literal roster limit that the NCAA allows you to take. So you might not be on.
Yeah. And you can't even sit in the dugout. Like, you gotta wear your
baseball stuff and sit in the stands.
Yeah.
If they take you.
Yeah. I mean, no, I do want to add this piece, right? Because I don't want to be super negative about it, but it is a reality. And like, sometimes reality can come off as harsh, but like, you, if you're listening to this and you're a player and your parent, like, you need to at least understand this, right? And you need to understand that these are possible scenarios that you could find yourself in. But the other piece of it is too, is that there's something to be said about competing. Like, you could show up as a freshman and realize when you get there in the fall, like, man, I'm like, I got a lot of work to do. You can either do the work and get in the mix and work your butt off, go hit your belt to the best player on the team and figure out what does that cat do that gets him to where he is. And you can continue to develop. Because if you're going to be there as a freshman and you realize that, like, you might be 37th on the roster, you got a year to get yourself in a position at the end of the year where you're creeping into, like, this guy might be able to help us as a sophomore. Like, that should be your goal. If you're not one of those guys who's really in that mix early, you need to look at it that way. You don't need to look at it as, well, I'm not going to play. Like, I'm going to cash it in this year. But you still need to get better and put yourself in a position, because guys make big jumps. Like, you get in the weight room and you get at bats and you learn how to play like a college player. Maybe you have a niche skill that helps people win, right? Maybe you're a really good defender who can't hit right now. That's okay. Most kids just need to get stronger. Maybe you can find a role as a defensive replacement. Well, I can tell you what, if you can help a program win, you have secured yourself an opportunity to get better, right? And, you know, maybe you're like a funky slot dude who can find a role as a one inning guy. Like, that's a role that helps people win, and being able to find out, what can I do to get in the lineup? What can I do to be the guy that when we're rolling somebody, I get at bats because I'm a really good practice player. And the coach looks down on the bench, we're up by 12, and he goes, I'm going to get Andy in at bat because that dude busts his ass every day. You go hit a double. Well, you get that at bat next time. Next thing you know, somebody needs an off day. Well, I'm going to start that kid. Like, that's a hard thing to get across to kids, is that one opportunity practicing hard every day can lead to more opportunity, in that you need to find a way to help the team be better. And sometimes it's not necessarily by being a starter. Sometimes it's by being a really good teammate. Sometimes it's by being able to do really small things that can help a team win. Sometimes it's just being a guy who's a really good practice player. You know, that matters. And coaches actually take kindly to guys who do that. And those guys tend to find themselves getting opportunities, because coaches are always going to gravitate to dudes who are willing to be team guys. And I've coached, you know, plenty of guys like that, that you, whenever the time there was for flexibility to get somebody in, like, we always had one or two guys like, yeah, we're going that guy, because that dude busts his ass every day and he's going to get an opportunity. And it always seemed to work out for those guys. They always seemed to find a role later on in the career. And I don't think it's a coincidence. No, I don't think it's a coincidence at all.
Well, as coaches, you're constantly evaluating. Like, that's your job. Your job is to continually evaluate your team and where you're at, whether or not you're, you know, 40 and 10 or 10 and 40, like, you're trying to figure out where your team is at and who's actually putting in the time and the effort. And, you know, I always used to say, like, the, you know, recruiting is not to maintain the status quo. The recruiting is meant to continually move your program forward. So, like, every class that you bring in theoretically should be better than the previous class that you brought in. And if you're developing guys, like, those guys should be better that are older than the younger guys, but those younger guys, the floor is now raised with those younger guys. So now, like, those younger guys are going to come in and push those older guys because they're going to be better than what was there previous. It's like, you know, those older guys be like, whew, I'm still better, but, like, these dudes are, they're getting nipping at my heels right now. Like, I gotta actually show up and do a really good job every day. You know, and I think that that's the hard thing that people don't understand when you get into college baseball, is that it is really, really hard to show up every day when you're not playing and bring energy and be tough and put in the energy and the time and the effort to be good, to help the team win. Because eventually you are going to get that opportunity. And then what you do with that opportunity is going to dictate what's going to continue to happen forward. You know, so if you're, you know, if you don't show up to practice and you don't have energy and you don't really care and you don't, you know, whatever it is, like, you're not going to get those opportunities. But if you show up and you're prepared and you practice hard and you bring it every day, like, it's going to be good for you in the long run.
Yeah, we've certainly digressed from the topic, but I think this stuff's important, right? That a lot of times what separates really good players, no matter what level you're at, is how consistently do you show up as the best version of yourself, right? Like, how consistently can you be a really good practice player? How consistently can you bring your A effort? And those guys tend to separate over the long haul because they stack days together and they end up getting better and they end up developing. And it's not just the superstar guys, it's the guys who end up being maybe a mid-roster guy as a freshman, and they learn how to practice and they are able to assimilate into what the life of what a college player is, on and off the field. And eventually you stack enough of those good days together and you start to gain ground on the guys who can't. And eventually you close the talent gap and you keep stacking those days together. And now the talent gap is even, but because you've put in that work, you now know how to prepare. You now know how to compete. You now know how to fail. And you've put yourself in a situation where you're going to get some opportunities on the field. And I've just seen it play out too many times. Every good player I ever played with was like that. Every really good player I ever coached had that same thing in them, is that they had the ability to show up and give a really good effort. And it's not about being perfect. Like, they all have bad days. Like, everybody has shitty days where you're not good. But the effort and the focus was always there. And that's usually being able to stack those days is usually the difference maker for a lot of guys. A lot of guys, the light bulb doesn't really just go off right away. They kind of gradually got to learn, okay, this is how I need to show up. And then eventually it clicks, but it's usually not just an overnight, like, well, I suck at practicing. And then you come in tomorrow and you're good at practicing for the rest of your career. Like, you usually got to kind of figure it out gradually.
Yeah, it's the biggest part of, I think, being a freshman. I still have nightmares of you screaming, "Figure it out," at shortstop when I was catching in the fall of my freshman year. Like, I had no idea what was going on, you know, but eventually.
I did not do that.
Yes, you did. Eventually, you start to figure out, like, you know, how to practice, what you're supposed to do, and what you got to do every day to kind of get yourself into the lineup. So it's, you know, it's, I hate this term, and I think I've said this before, you do have to, you know, in essence, grind it out. You know, and that could be, you know, a number of guys. If you find yourself in the 36 to 40 range, on rosters, to really grind it out, to get burn and get out there and really be able to help that team contribute to whatever it is that you're trying to do, which ultimately I think is, you know, every team's goal, to win championships and such.
Yeah. Well put. I apologize for yelling at you. It was all in love.
I didn't take it personal.
I know you didn't. That's probably why I was able to do it. Yeah. I mean, we talked about a lot today. Interesting topics. I'm sure we'll touch on them again. You know, it's something that's certainly going to be interesting to track the impact of the roster expansion, as well as how this updated rule for contacts is going to play out. So I'm sure we'll touch on it again. But as usual, Coach Glass, it's been a pleasure. We'll reconvene later this week for another recording. But
we'll run it back. It'll be good.
Yeah, we'll run it back. If you're watching on YouTube, you know, hit the subscribe button. If you're listening on Apple or Spotify, you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at EMD Baseball. Give us a follow. Hopefully you learned something today. And we'll be back next week.